Hi there, 7:05 on The Morning Voice. I got to tell you, we have to stop meeting like this, Matt. This is twice in a period of about 1 week where I've been filling in for folks that have a couple of things going on and just for whatever reason can't be here. Tom Moulton last week was in Galveston, the center of probably what I would call the biggest town that had the biggest hurricane in the history of the country back 100 years ago. He's back now, but today Grant Kruger's in Washington, D.C. with the Arizona Restaurant Association, and he's, I have to think he's probably wining and dining the senators. I don't know on what kind of wining and dining, maybe with an H on the wine. Anyway, my special guest today for the whole show, he's going to help me do some of the heavy lifting here with some of the people we're going to talk to, among whom is Jesse Lugo, who is running for Ward 5 council seat, is Dan Maurice from KOLD, an old friend, and I mean
yes,
old friend.
We go back many years, a couple of decades.
Literally and figuratively. You look pretty close to when I first saw you rolling in from Arizona City to KOLD doing weekend news.
Yeah, that was June of 99 when I first got here, and Steph, my wife at the time, was working in Phoenix. I was working in Tucson, so we found a spot right in the middle, Arizona City.
With no water. No assured water supply is what I should say.
Well, there is a little lake there where houses are built on the lake.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do. I flew over it when I fly to Phoenix doing traffic. I'd fly over Arizona City, and these master planned, already laid out communities with like three houses in them because there was no assured water supply. Mm-hmm. And still there isn't.
Yeah, the 100-year supply.
It's not there.
Yep.
And so someday maybe that'll get figured out and that will be maybe the next Casa Grande. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, there's those lots are ready to go. There's hundreds of them there if you were to fly over.
Yeah.
And no houses.
Nope. Lots of empty space, very flat, very dusty. Yeah. For fun, I ran for the, the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
I ran for the Chamber of Commerce at Arizona City.
Did you win?
I did. Wasn't much competition.
Well, maybe there was. You know, maybe it's like 6-6 or something like that. There was a tiebreaker vote.
It was fun. But no, you and I met, that was, 25, 26
it's
years ago.
It's been a while.
It has been.
It's been a long time.
Been a
and
long,
you've,
fun
you've
run.
Hung in. I've hung in most of that time, but it's just good to see you today.
You too.
A lot of stuff has happened to both of us.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about what happened yesterday on I-10 because you were right in the eye of that in terms of what you do for a living. I was in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from this dude, Matt Neely, who said, use 79 to come home. Don't Oracle use
Junction.
I-10.
Yeah.
Then my wife, Mrs. Kaith, called me, and two of the little Kaiths who were in their 20s and 30s said, don't come down I-10. So I had plenty of notice.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to just come down the old way, 79. I rolled over the Tom Mix Wash at 8:35 last night, gave a salute to Tom Mix's memorial, and it was dark.
Yeah.
Man, it's so dark out there.
It is.
There's nothing out there.
Nothing. Just the road.
But, you know, you get into Oro Valley, and you're back in civilization again. I got home at a reasonable hour. But so tell me what we know about this crash other than what Matt mentioned, which is four
non-life-threatening.
Non-life-threatening.
Yeah. Yesterday we were hearing critical. Now we're hearing non-life-threatening, so that's good. But I first started getting notifications from some buddies before it really broke. And so we kind of had a heads up on it. We sent a crew up there. And then by this time, you know, the ADOT, DPS is letting us know the interstate's been shut down.
Both directions.
Both directions, which is, you know, it's not that common. I mean, we definitely have our fair share of crashes, but to have both directions shut down on a major interstate like that. And then also the first call was a mass casualty call. And that's even how DPS was initially describing it. So your heart as a parent, you know, I've got three boys.
Sure.
As a parent, my first thought is like, oh my gosh, I hope these kids are okay, you know, the driver.
And you heard it was a school bus, but you didn't know it was from Marana.
Exactly.
Right?
My first thought was it was MUSD because of the location. But we actually quickly found out it was Kingman. So I called the Dr. Dorner. She's the superintendent of Kingman Unified School District. Couldn't reach her, but I was the first to confirm that was Kingman. And so, yeah, you know, your heart kind of drops, but then you're also, you go in news mode and definitely start sending out the social media alerts. Hey, I-10 is shut down, find an alternate route. I was telling people about Oracle Junction. And then from there on out, it's just trying to find out, you know, how the kids are doing. That was kind of our top priority.
Here's what's, and because I did this, and when they shut down two lanes, you know, both directions, usually it's for a helicopter to come in, stay away from the field of injury, load up who's there, and then fly out and then reopen that direction.
Yeah.
But they never did that.
No.
And so I called my friends who are all retired, just like, you know, you and I, well, you're not, but I'm kind of retired. And I said, you know, this doesn't sound right to me. And with no fatality, why is it still closed so long?
Yeah.
And you said to me when you came in, it opened like at 3 o'clock this morning or something like
I was surprised that it was closed for so long, because as you and I were speaking, it usually is only closed down for that long when there is a fatality.
Right. But, and there's no fatal.
No, but there is an arrest. And so this driver, the SUV, which is also a little strange, they haven't told us the charges that this driver's facing. We did speak with a witness who says that it looks like it, you know, crossed multiple lanes of traffic.
Right.
So, you know.
Through the median.
Yeah. What are they looking at? You know, what's the condition of the driver?
I'm just trying to think that maybe some of this may be youth and inexperience by the DPS, just making sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed, because they're not sure if they may need to close it again, so they just keep it closed.
Keep it closed, you know? Get a full investigation underway, recreate it, you know. Yeah, and when you have these serious injuries, you know, maybe if one of them is very serious where it could go fatal, hopefully it doesn't happen.
Right, they do more.
They do more,
I got
exactly.
But still, this just seems unusual in the length of the closure and both directions to me. So, it's 7:12. We've talked enough about the top story here locally. We're going to get into you, figuratively, and we're going to find out about how, after Arizona City, things came together for you. One of the guys that I know was a big part of your life and still is a guy that was your general manager at the time, Jim Arnold.
Jim, Sonny Jim, yeah, love that guy.
Who brought you here.
He did.
He was the guy that made the call, wasn't it?
It was Jeff Sales, but it was Jim Arnold who gave me the job from weekend to main anchor. He was the one that took the chance on me because I was young and not very smart.
Well, you were smart enough to come out here.
I mean, smart in the way of where my job, yes, but some of the decisions I made in my personal life, not very smart. And Jim he saw something in me, and he literally made me change my life around. I mean, kind of get out of that college mode of thinking and getting more serious about life in general.
Yeah. Well, let's start where you were born.
I was born in Anchorage, Alaska. My dad was in the Air Force. He was an avionics technician on the B-52 bomber during Vietnam. Never got sent overseas. He actually put in for it because he was bored in Alaska. Didn't like the cold. So I was born in Alaska.
So he wanted to stay up all night in Alaska.
No sun.
Where the sun never sets.
Never sets. But we moved away as soon as he got out of the Air Force. I wish he were still alive, but he could tell you. He was in for 4 years, 3 months, 5 days, 22 hours, however long it was. He couldn't wait to get out. And he's from San Diego, California. So as soon as dad got out of the Air Force, my mom, very young, they were in their early 20s, they pack up a Capri and they drive down part of that dirt road from Alaska to San Diego.
A Capri.
A Capri, gray Capri.
Those were in the 70s. I almost bought one of those. I wanted one when I was 12. That was a Mercury Capri. Those were great little cars. Yeah. That was a great little car.
So family of three driving down that road from Alaska to San Diego. So I was about 6 months old. And then spent my childhood in San Diego, my dad's hometown. My grandmother lived there, so I had nice family. My uncles, my cousins, we got together at my Uncle Bill and Aunt Joanne's house every Sunday.
Yeah.
So it was a great childhood. And then it was changing. So this is the mid-80s, early to mid-80s. It's changing a lot. Dad didn't like it anymore. So where'd we go? Pawnee, Oklahoma, town of 2 stoplights, 1,800 people. And it's where my grandmother was from. And my great-grandfather homesteaded there in Pawnee County.
So that had to be oil-related, I'm guessing.
Yeah, cattle rancher a bit of farming for my grandma's dad. Yeah, kind of just, you know, back in the day, a jack-of-all-trades. They kind of did anything they could to make money.
Yeah.
My Uncle Jack went to California during the Dust Bowl, came back. So a lot of family history there in Pawnee. And I still have my Uncle Wes and a lot of cousins out there too. So,
do you ever go back there?
I do. I like to visit. It's been a few years since I've been back, but it's nice to go visit. I really couldn't imagine living there anymore. It's just not a whole lot to do. It's sad. I mean, it's a lot of dying towns.
I know.
America.
Kimball, Nebraska for me. Okay. Same thing.
Just
north of you a little bit and to the west. Mm-hmm. Dying town. Missile Center, Minuteman Missiles, and they have a place called Clean Harbors that burns all the medical waste from around the country at very high temperatures.
Yeah.
400 people employed there. That's the biggest employer probably in the region, not only in the town, but just a few hundred people, maybe a couple thousand people in the town. I got a text message today from the class president who said they're going to have a get-together on the 4th of July.
So right on. You going to go?
I'm going to try to get
you
back
need to get there.
I'm going to try to get back there.
It's fun to relive our youth. I mean, I've been to several of my high school reunions, so it's fun.
It is a lot of fun. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to catch up quickly to where you are now.
Okay. I'm here.
I know you're here, at least physically.
Physically.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is early
for me. What time do you get home? What time do you get home?
I get home about 10:45, 10:50 at night. Hey, I recognize that song. That's Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Well, Matt Neely takes the liberty of making sure that our guests have their favorite music, and we know that you love going to Mexico and listening to Roger Klein.
I do. Thanks, Matt.
7:16 on The Morning Voice, in for Grant Krueger, who's in Washington, D.C. I'm Big Al with Dan Marries. We'll be right back. How many times did you go to Mexico?
Okay, so Circus Mexicus is a big multi-day festival, music festival. I've probably been down there maybe 20 times over the years. And then there's JJ Jam in January with Roger Klein. So that's King of the Hill. That's Roger Klein jamming out on the guitar. They used to be the Refreshments when they first made it big, like back in the Gin Blossoms era in the mid to late 90s. I mean, they were on Conan O'Brien back in 96, I believe, 97. And then they went independent label, and now they're Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. And my friends make fun of me that how big of a
you're
fanboy.
You're a fanboy.
I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, you are a fanboy.
And I own it. I've got the sticker on my truck. I've got their glyph, a 2x2 made out of steel, my security screen door. So, yeah, I live and breathe Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
He went to McClintock High School in Tempe.
Yes, he's born in Tucson. And then his dad is Doc Klein. He's got a ranch down in Elgin, Sonoyta, Elgin. And then his mom was up in Tempe. So he's going back and forth between Tempe and Sonoyta as a kid growing up. So he got the best of both worlds. He got the city life of Phoenix Metro and then the cattle ranching life of Sonoyta, Elgin. And you can hear it in his music. I mean, he loves Mexico. He's fluent in Spanish. So he's got a lot of accolades to Mexico, some lots of stuff.
So from Pawnee, Oklahoma,
yep.
Where did we go?
From Pawnee, Oklahoma, went to Grand Junction, Colorado, mm-hmm. Mesa State College. It's now Colorado Mesa University. And I was on the six-year bachelor program, but it's because I changed my major 5 times.
What'd you start with, real quick? Give me all six of them, or five of them.
Physics, computer science, criminal justice, business management, broadcast journalism.
So what changed... all these changes.
Did you notice how they got easier?
Is that true, though? Are you just saying that, or is that true?
I mean, I wanted to be a pilot. My dad was a helicopter pilot. I wanted to kind of go that STEM route. But I'll be honest with you. I just I moved to Colorado from Pawnee, Oklahoma, and I kind of had the freedom of being a college student. So I wasn't the best in studies, but I also just, I needed to find something I was passionate about. I mean, computers, I love computers, but I didn't like Pascal programming.
Yeah.
And so.
Which no one uses now.
No.
Except maybe the IRS.
So I kept on switching around, but what the changing point was, I was working at a scuba shop. I was working on my dive master. I'm a rescue diver through Patty. And my boss comes in one day, he goes, hey, do you want to be in a commercial? I'm like, absolutely. Go down to the TV station, KJCT, the ABC affiliate in Grand Junction. Guess who the main anchor was back then? It was Chris Pickle, who used to be an anchor here in Tucson and Phoenix. So I walked in, I go down there, I make the commercial, I get to meet Chris Pickle, and I'm awestruck because at the time I was a news hound. I mean, if I saw cop cars, I'd want to follow them. I wanted to know what was going on. And so the very next day, I changed my major for the fifth and final time. And my dad was like, what are you doing? Will you please find purpose in life? But after that, once he saw my passion, he loved it. Yeah.
Out of Grand Junction to where?
Mankato, Minnesota. So I graduate from 96, but I already had 2 years experience. I was the main weatherman my senior year in college at KJC or KREX in Grand Junction.
You were not a meteorologist.
No, I was
there
a weatherman.
There is a difference.
Big difference. And actually, you know, when I was graduating, I was sending out tapes and resumes. I sent tapes off to Nebraska, Podunk, and I got offered a position as a weatherman. And I told that news director, I was like, there are farmers in Nebraska that know way more about weather
that
than I do.
That depend on a meteorologist. That depend on it, right.
Yes. And I politely declined. So I went to Mankato, Minnesota for 1 year, one winter, said no moss. And I went to Yuma, Arizona from Mankato. So I went from one extreme to the other.
You became a human?
I became
being.
A human.
A human being.
A human being. And I'm, you know, it's funny. When I got that job, I called my dad because he traveled a lot and he's from San Diego. I was like, Dad, you ever heard of Yuma, Arizona? He goes, yeah. I go, I just got a job there. I took it. And he goes, why?
My dad was stationed there in the service.
MCSU?
During Korea, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the CAT operators. They did a lot of explosions and blowing stuff up out there. And then he'd come in with the CAT and push it all
clean
in.
Clean it all up?
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, because they have the MCASU and YPG, the Yuma Proving Ground.
Right.
So I was in Yuma from 97 to 99, got the job in Tucson. I had some friends that worked in Yuma, came over here. They put in a good word for me. Got hired as the weekend anchor and did that from 99 to 2007-ish? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were a long time on the weekends.
I was.
A long time.
7.5 years. And it got to the point where I was actually starting to look for other jobs.
Yeah.
But
That is really unusual to be that long on a weekend position. Kent Dana up in Phoenix was like that too. He was Mr. Weekend forever.
Long time.
Just like you were here. Yeah. Yeah. And then, bing.
Yep.
It happens.
Randy Garcia left. And, you know, there was a little voice in me that said, man, if you can just stick it out, maybe another year, maybe. And I said that for like the last 2.5 years. But then after that, you know, all your buddies are out tailgating and all that, and I'm at work. So,
You should be anyway.
I know.
Even if it's a weekend job.
But
married with a kid.
Yeah, I was.
Old Curtis was probably happy that you got to come home.
Yes, very much so. Now he's 26. So,
wow.
I
remember him when he was just three.
Little baby, man. Yeah. A little toddler. And then we talked about Jim Arnold. And when I put in my name in the hat for the main anchor job, I mean, they didn't just give it to me. They brought in.
Jim doesn't give anything to anybody.
No, he doesn't.
He makes you work for it.
He does. And I already considered myself a hard worker. I mean, I have a passion for my job. I love it. I feel very fortunate and blessed to have a job that I love so much. So with that said, I mean, I kicked it into high gear. I was the interim fill-in anchor with Chris Pickle and then Heather Rowe came in the show.
Right.
So, I mean, I really worked my tail off and Jim Arnold saw, but he brought in a guy from Little Rock, Arkansas, brought in a guy from, was it Boston or Baltimore? And, you know, before a newscast, I went in there and did my makeup in the men's room. Well, he was in there doing his makeup because he was going to do a little run through. And I said, well, isn't this awkward? You're here for a job that I really want. And I just stared him in the eyes.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jim probably figured that you had the job, but he just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. Well, he told me this is your job to lose.
Yeah.
So
just wanted to make sure.
Just wanted to make sure. And I every time I see him, I always tell him, man, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having faith in me.
So here we are today.
Yep.
How many years?
June 13th will be 26 years that I've been here. So my oldest son, Curtis, he turned one on June 12th, 99. So I actually called my boss and said, hey, my son's birthday is June 12th. Can I start on June 13th so I can be there for his birthday? Because my original date was. So June 13th, 99 is when I got here. And it'll be 26 years this summer.
What over the last couple of years has been the most important thing to you?
If professionally or personally?
I would say professionally.
Professionally?
I don't like getting into personal things.
No, I get it.
Because people ask me that stuff too, and I just kind of back off. And, you know, no one knows my kids' names. You know, they don't know them.
Well, that's good because sometimes I might be a little too open on social
media.
Well,
I'm going to make sure that you don't really pass along too much.
I'm kind of an open book. I think, what was the question again, Al? I already forgot.
The most important thing professionally over the last couple of years.
You know, I think it's been the change with digital at work, if we're going to keep it professional. It is changing so rapidly.
Not for the better for people who like the old school.
I'm definitely
TV
old school.
And radio.
Yeah, I kind of miss the days of the old school. But I think what the challenge is who's telling the truth. I mean, there's so many avenues of information now. And, you know, I get it a lot. Like, hey, how come you're not reporting this? How come you're not saying that? We know that this happened. I was like, you know what? I don't have that confirmed yet. And so the digital age, the digital change, I think is going to be a big challenge.
Well, we have a guest, our first one. He's looking at us right now out in the green room, Jesse Lugo, who's running for Ward 5 as a Democrat in an open seat that's being vacated by Richard Fimbres. We'll be back to talk to him as we come back. 7:35, back in for Grant Krueger. I'm Big Al, along with my guest host, who we just learned a lot about, caught up 30 minutes worth of his life, Dan Maries from KOLD TV, Channel 13.
Good morning,
Dan. Al also does the news on Channel 11 at times.
Occasionally, yes.
You have a limited marketing agreement, your company does, with Tegna,
yes,
which owns
Fox
Channel 11.
Yes.
And they pay you seven figures, not you personally.
Not me personally.
But they pay the company seven figures who you work for to provide all the services that a regular station would have.
Yeah, we treat it just like a newscast.
Exactly. And they don't have to come down and do it themselves.
Nope.
Because they own Channel 12 up in Phoenix.
Up in Phoenix, so. Yes. Yeah.
We have a special guest here at 7:36 in the morning. He is really a bon vivant. He's a local, a native, and a local, because they are different.
Yes.
You can be a local and not be a native.
I figure that's what I am. I'm a local.
I think I am too.
Yeah, I think so too.
Not a native.
No. Nope.
This guy is both.
Yes. And something to be proud of.
It
is. I love meeting natives.
He's been around a long time, and people know him from this station because of former employees here who remain friends of ours, all of ours.
Yes.
Jesse Lugo is here. Jesse,
morning,
good morning.
Kate. Good morning.
Good to see you.
Please identify local, because in Spanish it means that you're crazy.
Local. L-O-C-A-L.
Don't be called Lugo Loco, right?
Lugo, hey, it's got a good ring to it, though.
No.
Jesse, how many years have you done the Bike in the Box promotion?
We're entering to our 27th year.
Wow.
Doing Bike in the Box, only 27 years. We started at the El Casino Barroom.
With John C. Scott.
With John C. Scott.
Our good friend.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we started with 25, 50, 75, 150, and then we grew to 500 bicycles. In doing so, we used to assemble the bicycles there at the El Casino Barroom.
I remember that.
And then 2 years later, we went to the St. Augustine Cathedral Church for a couple years. And currently, we're at the Elks Lodge 385, located on Lester and Oracle. Now, we're going to enter our 27th year. This year will be Saturday, December the 6th. We purchased a bicycle from Walmart because they gave me a preferred price. But the key about it is they deliver the bicycle to us.
Mm-hmm.
So at 8:01 in the morning, we have volunteers. Last year, we had about 60 volunteers. We unloaded 500 bicycles in 17 minutes.
That's really great. You have plenty of help.
Absolutely.
You got plenty of help.
We have seasoned volunteers that have been with Lugo Charities, Bike in a Box. Why do we call it Bike in a Box? A few years ago, there was a bike shop that got sued because there was a liability issue where they took the bike in for some maintenance and the chain came off, and they sued the bike company, and the jury awarded the family $514,000.
Mm. Right.
In doing so, I do my best thinking about 1-2 o'clock in the morning when my mind is still circulating.
And you said to yourself, "Self, I don't have errors and omissions insurance on my nonprofit, and I could be sued."
Yeah, absolutely, but I do now. In doing so, I say we give Bike in a Box, so this way the parent or guardian, they assemble the bicycle in promoting the true Christian spirit of family unity, and it works well.
How much was the first bike that you bought from Walmart at the El Casino Ballroom?
$25.
How much is it now?
$65.
That's basically their cost, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, their true cost, their invoice cost.
Well,
they may make a dime.
Well, I won't get into the details because I don't want the prices that I negotiate, you know, for 27 years, I get a preferred price on it. So that's negotiable. Again, longevity doing business in business with Walmart, because my experience with Walmart extend back when I had a service station. I used to buy oil directly from Walmart in truckloads. A friend of mine, we invested in truckloads. Sometimes we get five to six truckloads of oil, and I won't say the brand because that's a brand that
that my brother used to work for in Houston and got fired, and now he's working at Shell.
Yes. But in doing so, see, I had a good price on it where we could provide Lubone filter for a customer for $16.95, where the rest of competitors, whether it be service stations or garage owners, their price was probably about $25 to $28. So we had a complete edge. We offered a great value for our customers, and that's how we built our business.
Now, I remember, and it's going to take too long to get into the business part, but I just wanted to tell you that I remember you being at 6th Avenue and Speedway, and when you drive there now and see that Black Rock coffee, what are you thinking?
Well, it's Starbucks coffee.
Oh, it's Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I thought it was Black Rock.
In fact, many of my friends and past customers say, well, that's Lugo Starbucks. They believe that I own the property. That's not the case.
No, it's sadly not the case. I wish you did, but I'm not sure that there was any kind of soil remediation or anything that they had to do to, you know, when they bought that, if that was part of the deal.
But it was. In fact, that's
hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that.
Arizona Department of Environmental Quality has to then give you a clean bill of health
right.
when once you vacate the property. The underground tanks have to be removed within 1 year if they're not no longer used on it. And so with that, there was a couple of investors that wanted to buy the property. But unfortunately, evidently the state did not have the documents. I have those documents, and I won't get into the detail of what happened, but information is not free, right? And I assisted one of the companies then with a proper document so they can obtain financing to purchase that property.
Right. Well, here's what I know. You were, before Dan Mari's or Alan Kath were here, you were the expert and you were basically the go-to for all the media in town about the price of gas and why was it going up or why was it coming down or why is it not doing anything?
Absolutely. When we had all the TV stations would come to me, they'll send their new reporters in. I asked them where they're from.
Right.
I asked them then, what information are you receiving on a national level? This way I'll give you what's happening here in Tucson, Arizona, and how it affects consumers at the pump. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, then I gave them the information. So I was the expert in fuel pricing because during that time frame, I served for quite a few years as president for the Service Station Dealers of Arizona. We were a statewide organization representing all the independent dealers in Arizona, whether it be Flagstaff, Phoenix, Duncan, Globe, and, of course, Tucson, Nogales, and all these areas. So we will have a state meeting in Phoenix, then a Phoenix Tucson chapter here where we had all the dealers came in. So we would share information. But that at that time, we shared information how these oil companies had incentive programs to increase their volume. And by doing so, it allowed then dealers to be very competitive. The market has changed quite a bit. There's only one independent dealer left in Tucson. That's Mark Stradler on a Shell station on 5th and
Craycroft. Right.
Which I negotiated his supply contract with his supplier.
Was Arnold over at Speedway and Craycroft the next to the last independent, or was he always?
Second to the last because Arnold
last.
Just recently retired.
He retired, and they sold that.
And he tells quite a bit of story coming from Cuba, and I asked Arnold if he would come on radio and tell the story, but he's done that in the past. I hope that Arnold has a great retirement because he deserves it. But when he tells the story about what happened in Cuba with Fidel Castro, it's something like history that what has happened and a lot of individuals that immigrated to the United States and what they had to do to become U.S. citizens. And, of course, Arnold became a very successful Shell dealer at his location.
He was very successful, yeah. In fact, a lot of mechanics that you have now around town, mine included, worked for Arnold, got his start with Arnold because he would teach him from the ground up what to do to a car.
Absolutely.
He was a fantastic guy, and he offered full service.
Yes.
Which hardly anyone does anymore.
Well, I visited with Arnold last year. It was mid part of January. The temperature was 22 degrees. Arnold had his heavy jacket on. He was on the full service pump cleaning the windows.
That's the time to get full service.
And he waved and said, "Lugo, I want to talk to you." I said, "About what, Robert? You need to run for mayor." I said, "No, I'm not here for that. I understand that you're going to retire, so I just came to congratulate you." So we had a good discussion. He's a very loyal member with the Service Station Dealers of Arizona as a member. But again, that's a time where majority of stations here in Tucson have full service, where they actually pump the gas for you. They checked underneath the hood.
Maybe for an extra dime a gallon.
Yes.
You know, now it's a lot more, but it should be, because there's a lot more stuff to do, really,
well,
I think.
But
no one does it except the guy at 5th and
Mark Schraler in 5th and Craig. He's a Shell station, and he's the only one that provides full service. But one of the things with full service stations, back in the, we passed a state law that you had a disability, they had to pump the gas for you. And with the service station dealers of Arizona, we passed a state law that still exists today, that if you're disabled, and even in a convenience store, if you have two employees and you request that they pump your gas for you, they have to do it by state law.
Did you know that?
I had no idea. Wow. That's interesting.
There's a story.
I was just thinking that.
That is a story, right? I saw the little light bulb go
like,
on.
Ding, ding, ding.
That is a story.
That is very interesting.
I know in Oregon, they still, by law, you have people there to pump your gas. You can't do it yourself.
It's a state law that in Oregon, in fact, on a annual basis with gasoline dealers, we would go East Coast, West Coast, and we'd have the presidents, and then we have the executive directors and the attorneys meet in separate conference rooms, so we would share ideas. But when the state of Oregon passed that law that they had to pump the gas at full service stations, they try to not to do so and go self service, the voters didn't approve it.
Yeah.
So today it still exists. They have
still
to pump
exists.
Their gas. Absolutely.
I went up to Oregon to visit my daughter, who was a traveling nurse there during COVID, and she said, "Dad, stay in the car." And I said, I can't
Feels
stay
weird.
In the car and do this, you know? I got to go talk to the guy." And there were women, lots of gals doing it too, because it paid well. So we're going to shift gears right now and talk about why you're really here, because it was quite interesting to do what you're doing. You waited, and you are waiting for the opportunity to not challenge anyone, which I think was very smart. Richard Fimbres, your good friend, is retiring.
Yes, correct.
You live in Ward 5.
Yes.
Richard serves the city's Ward 5. And you and Richard had a talk, I'm guessing, and you promised Richard that you would fulfill what Richard set out to do for the Ward 5 residents of the city.
That's correct. Yeah, back in January, I met with Richard because I was asked to assist with the 22nd Street overpass for the bridge to be rebuilt, so I gave him an update of what was happening on it. But at the time, he had mentioned to me that he was going to retire. In doing so, I said, "Richard, when you decide to publicly announce that, I'm going to consider to run in your position, because to fill in your shoes, because after 16 years of public servant," and Richard appointed me to the Board of Adjustments, and I've sat on Propositions 101, 49, and 411 Bond Review Commission.
You're good friends.
Very good friends.
Yes, I know.
And in doing so, and then on March 24th, 2025, Richard endorsed me as the candidate to replace him in the Ward 5 election this year, where the election will be held on August the 5th.
We'll take the break and be right back and talk more with Jesse Lugo. We'll find out if anyone's running against him. I think there's maybe a one or two. We're going to find out in just a minute. 747, I think this is Roger Klein.
This is Roger Klein.
What's the name of the song, Dan?
Sonoran.
Go ahead. He'll tell you.
Oh, yeah. Matt. Sonoran, yes, there you go. Sonoran Hope and Madness. Is that what it was? Wait.
That's what it is.
Sonoran Hope and Madness. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Voice. That's Roger Klein of the Peacemakers, and I am Dan Marries, the evening news anchor for KOLD 13 News, getting a guest co-host with my good buddy.
My big Al. Almost let it go. I'm not as big as I used to be.
No, you're not. And I don't even feel like I can call you Big Al anymore, because you're not. But yeah, thanks, Al, for letting me fill in. And we're here with Jesse Lugo, candidate for Ward 5, Democratic candidate for the city council, stepped in after Richard Fimbres announced his retirement. Jesse, you're showing us some pictures here, and I'm looking at one of your older pictures here. And speaking of bigness, you've lost some weight, and you've done a lot of walking and biking in this campaign.
Yeah. Well, the picture you see on my literature there, I used to be very healthy.
And, not big healthy.
And of course, that happened, you know, during the pandemic, where, you know, people were just going, they felt, because of their health reason, and certainly you were at home, eating, snacking lackas, and watching TV. Mm-hmm. All of us did, and a lot of people gained weight.
Did you just say snack-a-lackas?
Yeah, snack-a-lacka. Right? You have a snack and a lacka, you do a lot of it.
I got it.
And that's the terminology that us Hispanics use, right? Because we have a tendency to always be munching with salsa and chips and what have you on it. But in that process, certainly, I'm down to 189 pounds.
Nice.
I've walked many neighborhoods. There's some neighborhoods are very challenging. Some of the neighborhoods that I walk, is certainly the gates were locked. Many, many pit that were would then tell the homeowners, there's somebody in the neighborhood that should not be here. And doing so, some of these dogs that charged me, in fact, I dog treats.
Right.
And I shot a video on my Facebook page, Jesse Lugo, where this big white dog charged me. I almost fell off my bicycle. And then said, hey, what are you doing? I threw him one of these biscuits, and he started chomping on it, and he's looking at me. I threw the second one at him, and his tail starts wagging. I got you now. Then I held the third one, and he actually came to me and took it right out of my hand.
Right on.
Now, some of these dogs that I did that to him, he started following me because when I enter into these neighborhoods, they said, who are you? I said, this is our neighborhood. And some of the people that live in the neighborhood say, you're a very brave person. These dogs don't like nobody. And I petted these dogs. They're following me, right? But if these dogs could vote, I'm going to win by a landslide.
I was just thinking that. If only they could vote. Well, you know, I'm looking at a Ward 5 map, and it's a very spread out ward. You got from south of Broadway, north of Valencia. You got a lot of the old barrios. You got Barrio Antonio, Arroyo Chico, Barrio Centro, Pueblo Gardens. Just talk about, as you've gone through here and you're campaigning, you're walking, you're knocking on doors, what are some of the issues that voters are sharing with you?
The number one issue continues to be now for a decade is police and fire, first responders. That's the number one issue because especially the elderly where it gets dark, they want to make sure that if they need to call 911 and they need assistance, then a police officer can respond quickly, especially if there's a health condition with the fire department. Certainly they want a quick response. So that's number one. Number two is roads.
Yeah.
There are neighborhood streets and the major arterials. Now, up to, because I've sat on three bond review commissions, 101, 49, 411, which we're an independent group with 12 commissioners, that the city provides information to us, a worst street first and funding available. Now, in doing so, we're independent. We don't answer to mayor and council. And so what the city provides us a list of these areas that need either asphalt replacement or maintenance on it, so we do that. And so they, especially some of these challenged neighborhoods, those streets are some of the worst. In fact, some of the meet us, I would invite you to come with me, and I'll walk you through those areas. I said, bring a bicycle so we can cover more territory.
Another story idea, and in the 2 minutes we have left, we need to get this guy some money and give us the vehicle that we need to do or tell us how we do it.
Well, first of all, I do want to mention my three advisors. F.N. Rodriguez, a former Pima County recorder, number one vote getter in Pima County. Sexto Molina, retired Tucson Police Department. And Fred Fitzpatrick, retired firefighter and paramedic. And these are critical because, again, first responders is critical because, in my opinion, out of the $2.4 billion budget, there's enough funds there to make sure that police and fire get equitable funding to make sure that the departments are fully that have personnel then to take care of the people's needs.
Basically, what you're telling me, as I read between the lines, and Dan's getting it too, is that you were probably a no vote for 414.
Well, the voters had decided on that, so we move on. Again, my issue: if the people of Tucson elect Jesse Lugo for the Ward 5 election. Because Jesse Lugo does not make promises. I make commitments. The best definition of commitment by Coach Riley was with the Lakers is either you're in or you're out. There is no wiggle room in the middle. So that's my commitment.
Tell us what we need to do as a listener to help you out.
If you go to lugofortucson.com, we have you can donate either online or download the donation form. But we're still upgrading the website. You can go to issues on it where I will identify all the issues that the people that have been knocking on doors that are important to them.
Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
After the top of the hour, a special guest straight out of Phoenix, one of Matt Neely's favorite people. Jesse Lugo, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Jesse, thank you.
You betcha.
Good to see you.
It's good to be seen.
I wish I were... Every time I'm a co-host, I wish I were the person that I was filling in for the co-host. I wish I were Tom Moulton. I wish I were Grant Krueger. I'm not either one. I'm Big Al. And with me today is Mr. Lugo departs. Jesse, good luck to you, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Dan Mari's from KOLD. Dan's got a couple great story ideas that Jesse has left us with. That one about... being disabled and requesting full service from a convenience. I've never heard that before.
I had no idea. It's been around since 91. Is that what you said, Jesse? 91. I've never heard this before. So, you learn something new every day.
At least something.
Yes.
Maybe lots of something.
And you know what else he was telling me, too, is he's leaving. First four-year class from Cholla High. So he was going to Tucson High. They had to have a quota. And so they bust him over to Cholla High, and he says they had air conditioning.
Everyone wanted to go to Cholla.
Yep.
Everyone wanted to go to Cholla. So we are standing by for our special guest who basically started in radio in Phoenix during what I would consider the radio wars of the 60s. Oh. In the 60s, in Tucson, it was KTKT 990 AM, and it was... Frank Khalil.
Frank had
20s, 30s, and 40s in terms of ratings. Mm-hmm. Everyone listened to him in the afternoon. This was Tucson. In Phoenix, this gentleman had his own very successful radio station and actually had some really strong competition from another rocking AM radio station. With me on the line is Pat McMahon from the Wallace and Ladmo Show. Pat, good morning.
Yes, and I will always be delighted to be introduced that way with all the different things I've been privileged to do. At the top of the list, the Wallace and Ladmo Show. And for folks in Tucson that were not privileged enough to be able to get Channel 5 in Phoenix, because I believe there was that great Berlin Wall that was put up around Tucson that didn't allow you to get other radio stations.
It was called the Catalina Mountains.
Well, and I believe it also had something to do with revenue.
Yeah.
And not having to compete with all those other stations. But anyway, it was a children's show that lasted 36 years and made people laugh the entire time. So thank you for mentioning that. And Frank Khalil. And Frank, he was part of a soda pop family down there, wasn't
That's it? Right, the Khalil Bottling the Khalil. Company.
Yep.
He and his brother, George. George really was the driving force of that, his brother.
Well, and I understand that the other driving force of your show is about to be introduced to me now.
His name is Dan Mari's. He works at KOLD.
The sister station of KPHO.
No, of KOOL.
Oh, back in the day. Yes.
Cool in Phoenix, cold in Tucson.
The Gene Autry days. Gene Autry was like 51% owner of that back then. Yeah, Pat, it's an honor to talk with you. I mean, I've seen stories. I saw the 70-year anniversary that Morgan Lowe's a good friend of mine there at KPHO, did on you last year. So it's...
Oh, we did a long interview in the original studios of Channel 5.
Yeah.
And that would be where Wallace and Ladmo started. And by the way, since my understanding of your format is that there isn't one.
Correct.
I hope you don't mind.
Just like your show.
I just want to jump in. I want to jump in and do a Gene Autry thing, because very quickly, when you're talking about the ownership of those two stations, being Gene Autry, the famous Western cowboy movie star, Wallace and Ladmo had such huge ratings, and there was such an enormous amount of revenue from everybody that had either cupcakes or toys or anything related to kids, that Los Angeles became very, very interested in the Wallace and Ladmo show and wanted us to tape an additional show and send it to L.A. On a daily basis. And it was terrific because we got to stay here and then have that exposure for kids in L.A. And after about 3 or 4 weeks, the program director called the founder and producer of the show, Wallace, Bill Thompson, and said, "Bill, we're getting mail on your show." And Wallace said, "Oh, terrific, after only a few weeks. That's sensational that people are watching and writing in." And the program director said, "Not so much. No, they're writing because you're not Captain Kangaroo and you're not Mr. Rogers. You seem to be Saturday Night Live, but for kids. And could you make Captain Super a little less political? And could you make Gerald a little more likable?" And these were characters from the show. And
the answer was no.
Wallace said, "No, we've been here for all of these years serving this community with that consistency and those characters, and Gerald is rotten, and Captain Super is a phony blowhard." And they said, "Well, I'm terribly sorry, this isn't going to work." And Wallace said, "Thank you." And we later met Gene Autry, and he apologized. But he didn't say, "Please welcome back."
Right, that's okay. 8:10 in the morning, Pat, the original fanboy in Tucson of the Wallace and Ladmo show, is my producer, who you spoke to yesterday with me. His name is Matt Neely, and Matt has a couple of things that he would like to ask you regarding the show as well. And then I really would like to just go back to the radio days, because I know a lot about the TV, but I don't know a lot about the radio. So, yeah, Matt,
well,
go ahead.
Whatever it is that you want to ask is terrific. Because we could just do 3 or 4 days on my childhood as the kid that grew up on the road with vaudeville parents.
Oh,
maybe we could do an entire week of these things, whether the audience was interested or not. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. And Wallace and Ladmo show came onto our radar again. And yes, I grew up on it in Tempe. It was aired in Tucson at some point because my wife was familiar with the show. She grew up in Sierra Vista. So she was, it was somehow
translator
made it through the ether to Southern Arizona. But one thing to point out, the show started on April 1st. So here we are on April 2nd, so 1954, so happy 71st anniversary to the show, ran 35 years. Tell the folks a little bit about the show. I mean, it was live action skits and introducing cartoons, and tell us a little bit about the show.
Well, and in fact, it began because the management at Channel 5 said, "We've got all of these expensive cartoons. Goldust Charlie, the old revenueer host of the show, not very funny, but they always, all of the people that ran local stations around the country, and every local station had some kind of a kid show, but they never thought about entertainment. They never thought that kids would care about anything except the cartoons, as always diminishing their respect for kids. And so they would always have a host, and they would get somebody from the sales department that was not making his quota, slap a sailor hat on, and just have him introduce Popeye or something like that. And it would be somebody that would do the commercials and introduce the cartoons. That's all they cared about. And at Channel 5, they said, "Well, that's what we do with kids' shows. Let's find out who on the staff will accept the host job." And as Wallace, Bill Thompson, the founder of the show, the creator of everything on the show, said, everyone said it was such a demeaning position that nobody would touch it except him. He was in the art department. And he said, "I'd love to do it." Created a character named Wallace Sneed, who was funny, pratfall comedy. One of his cameramen, a graduate of ASU, 4-year letterman in baseball, Vladimir Kwiatkowski, was a funny guy. and he was making people laugh on the stand. He said, "Abe, will you be my partner on this show?" And that's where the two of them started in 1954, as you said, ironically and appropriately, on April 1st. And the show went on for thousands and thousands and thousands of years until the very beginning of 90, 35, almost 36 years. In 1960, I came into Phoenix out of the Army. Had been a broadcaster before that, and an actor, and a performer like my folks. And I was planning on staying a couple of weeks, washing the khaki off in a pool in May of 1960. Beautiful weather, beautiful city. And I said, "Whoa, wait a minute. Nobody's waiting for me in New York. I think I'll stay for a while." And put in my resume, hired me for the news department, except I had fallen in love with this crazy, wacky, funny, satirical show on Channel 5 called The Wallace and Lanmo Show. Went downstairs in the studio every day watching the show. And one day Wallace said, "You know, I have inadvertently written a bit for three people. And there's only two of us. Would you help us out?" And for the next 30 years, I was the new guy helping him out.
That is fantastic. We are going to take a break right now, Pat, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about, you alluded to a few of your characters. I'd like to talk about some of the memorable characters
you
that you created.
If you're going to get me up this early in the morning, I am yours.
And I still want to find out about the radio, Chris versus Crux. So we're going to dig deep here.
And we're gonna go out with a little theme from the Mr. Grudgemeyer sketches, which was a recurring bit with Wallace and Lanmo, right? Sitting at the park and starting out just conversing. And by the end of the skit, they were always having a huge brawl, right?
You bet. Mr. Grudgemeyer was the original voice of Get Off My Lawn.
8:16 on The Voice with Pat McMahon, live from Phoenix. We're live in Tucson. We'll be right back. 20 after 8, in for Grant Krueger, who's in Washington, D.C., lobbying the two senators that we have here in our great state. I'm Alan, Big Al Kaith, my guest host, Dan Maries, the main anchor. Pat, the equivalent in Phoenix for Dan Maries down here at Channel 13 would be probably John Hook or Mark Curtis up where you are. He's kind of a big deal. He's got mahogany furniture and
smells of leather.
Yeah, from the Anchorman.
Does he have any influence with Dragon's Gate? Because I would like to know if they do deliver to Phoenix. I'd like three egg rolls and some fried rice.
Heck, I'd make the delivery myself, Pat. Al and I could do a road trip.
So Matt's got another question for you, the original fanboy of the Wallace and Lanmo Show here in Tucson.
So Pat, let's go through some of the characters, because you spoke about Gerald, the wealthy spoiled brat, right? And you talked about Captain Super, the superhero with questionable superpowers, or doubtable superpowers.
No, and excuse me, but please, because if the folks in Tucson that listen to you guys regularly, I know that they are a massive part of the radio audience down there. Say, wait a minute, I don't know about any kid show that has characters. Gerald was a rotten, miserable, spoiled child because we needed a villain like the World Wrestling Association. Lanmo was this lovable, sweet, goofy guy. But you need somebody to play off of. And so what do you want to do? You want to have another kid, but a really rotten one that bragged about his position in society. And Captain Super was every blowhard phony, like Uncle Willie, that came to your house on holidays and said to the kids, "I got a 20 for each one of you. Oh, I seem to have left my wallet at home. I'll catch you next time." He's many of the politicians that your parents voted for. And that was the kind of character that we did. Always the edgy person that bordered on reality, but was still funny. Thank you, Matt, for starting the characters off.
And Marshall Good, that was a good Arizona character because you had an element of pathetic to him.
Oh, he borrowed money from everybody in the studio, including the kids that were in the studio audience. He was hustling them for lunch money. And Marshall Good, after several years on the show, Wallace said something. And this is with the traditional old-fashioned tall cowboy Stetson hat and the Western early movie costume. And Wallace said, Marshall, you know what? After all these years, we've talked about everything. Your so-called Hollywood career that consisted of delivering food to the studios. But you never told me about law enforcement. So please, if you will, let us know about that part of your life as a marshal. And he said, what law enforcement? And what do you mean a marshal? Marshall's my first name. And he said, well, what's with the big badge on your shirt?
The 10-gallon ad.
He said, I got this shirt at Goodwill Industries, and it had a hole in it, so I covered it up with this badge. I mean, everything was the artificial lives of everybody we know. Please go ahead, Matt. Every story I tell will not be this long.
What was the premise of Boffo the Clown?
Oh, thank you. One of my favorites. Wallen Ladd and I would do personal appearances on the weekends and everything from Sun Devil Stadium at some event to the Whataburger down the street. And so we were booked in to Ringling Brothers as the honorary ringmasters of the Saturday matinee one time when the big circus was in town. And of course, promotionally, it was valuable to them to have it mentioned all week long before we arrived at the Coliseum where the circus was going on. And we came in the stage door of the Coliseum, the original home of the Phoenix Suns.
Sure.
And said, okay, Wallace, Landmo, Gerald, we're about to go on in a few minutes. Just tell them that we're here, ready to do the act. But over in the corner by the dressing rooms, all of the Ringling Brothers clowns were assembled because they hadn't been introduced yet. And they're looking over at us in costume, and they obviously do not like the idea of what they were thinking, three local yokels taking the laughs away from them. And it was really surprising how vindictive they seemed to be to have a local act, a comedy act, in when the clowns were there, and they were just like this, you know, miserable. Why did they have? We go on, huge reaction of the audience, booing Gerald, hooray for Ladmo, yes, giving away a Ladmo bag. Matt will discuss the Ladmo bags later on.
Indeed.
And it was a massive success. And as we came out, the clowns were even angrier. They were just really ticked that other funny people would come. They didn't mind the trapeze people. It was the folks that got laughs. So we got into the car, and Wallace, who always couldn't stand clowns on the show because they just never were really particularly funny. They just wore big shoes. And Wallace turned to us and said, we've got to have a clown. And he said, not like Ronald, not like Bozo, no, like them. And Boffo was this clown that hated kids and couldn't stand being around them. And finally, Wallace one day on the show said, your attitude is so terrible about the kids. That's our audience. What happens with you and the kids? And why do you do those birthday parties on the weekends, even though you don't like the kid that you're celebrating? And Boffo's answer was always, it's a buck. And that was it. He came in hungover from the night before, and just simply put the clown clothes on because somebody offered him a check. That kind of clown.
828 on the Morning Voice with us from Phoenix. Pat McMahon from the Wallace and Ladmo Show and from Radio Wars back in the 60s from Chris, his production. Actually, he was the program director of Chris, and you actually pulled a shift there, right?
Yeah, 9 to 12 in the morning. And by the way, we're not going to run into the half-hour break.
Oh, no, we're going to come close. Yeah, we got about a minute.
Radio guy.
I'll cut this down. Channel 5 did not like the idea of me selling the show to other markets and fired me. And Wallace said, no, wait, you can't do that. He's everybody else on the show besides Ladmo and me. And they did anyway. And the owners of Chris Radio found out about it, hired me to be a disc jockey, later became the program director opposite our arch nemesis, the other competitor in town, Crux. In other words, now we think of it as me versus Al McCoy. Later, of course, the 53-year voice of the Suns. But he was a disc jockey then.
8:29, we will take the bottom of the hour break and be back with Pat McMahon.
Oops, they did quite a few Beatles spoofs in their day with Mike Candelo. This is one of them, lovely Auntie Auntie Maud. Morning Voice will be right back.
No birthdays.
Kids don't like it.
They don't like
Bad
it.
Bad idea.
We are looking at a YouTube video from Wallace and actually Ladmo and Gerald having a fireside chat here. Gerald wanting to get rid of all the holidays at 8:35 here at the Morning Voice. Pat McMahon.
Well, excuse me, pardon me. Yeah, let me jump in. I'm sorry.
Please do.
I just kept thinking of the thousands of Tucsonans
that don't know who it is.
They listen to you every morning. And they're now saying, wait a minute, hold it. I almost, this instant, thought my life is better because they're introducing me to Chinese restaurants and financial advisors. And instead, on comes this wacky stuff. And I'll bet you that an enormous part of your audience said, but what else would I expect from Phoenix? I mean, I know that there's always been this competition between the two cities, but there are people right now who are saying, man, am I glad I didn't grow up there with that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, this is Phoenix, like it or not. I live there, and I actually worked with you. I was your newsman on KOY on Sunday nights back in the 70s. The Pat McMahon talk show. On Sunday nights,
pardon me for interrupting again, but in a day when there were no stations with talk shows, there was Sunday evening was about it, and we would get the governor and Frank Kush, the football coach at ASU at the time, and authors, because that was about it from the standpoint of interview talk radio, and had a great time and appreciated your bringing some aura of legitimacy to
very little. I was 19. I was the youngest person at KOY Radio. I have to tell you, you brought Ladmo and Wallace in one show, and I remember Bill Thompson saying, you know, I never thought, I can't remember his age at the time, it seemed like he said he was 54, that he would ever be playing cartoons for kids at this age. Do you remember him saying that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember him saying it many times because he was the product of a very affluent family in Bronxville, New York. He studied art. And as I told you before, one day when the kids show had vacated its host position, he took that on and we are all blessed, and I mean all of us, listeners, viewers, people who worked with him, that this brilliant guy decided to start the Wallace and Ladmo show and to guest on my radio show on KOY in the middle of the night. I thought Wallace never stayed awake much longer than 7:30.
Yeah, he was certainly he really was the driving force, starting with Wallace and Friends, and then bringing Ladd on, and then you on as that quote-unquote third wheel. Speaking of wheels, tell us about Hubcap and the wheels.
Another phenomenon out of the show was the fact that Wall came into the dressing room one day, and this was in the mid-60s, and he simply said what everybody was saying at the time, everybody in and out of show business, music, anything. Everybody was saying what Wallace said that day. These Beatle guys are everywhere. I understand, the British invasion had just begun, and as older newspaper people referred to them, those four mop tops from Liverpool had taken over broadcasting, music, everything in the entertainment world and culture. People were changing their haircuts. And Wall said, these Beatle guys are everywhere. We've got to have an overnight teenage sensation. And we got to have a rock and roll star. And of course, on the Wallace Show, all you did was say, okay, here's, and then introduce a new character, and it became a part of Arizona entertainment. And so we, our music director, Mike Condello, another brilliant performer and friend, Mike was in the studio at the time, and he and I both said, and I assumed, since I did all the other characters, that I was going to be the rock and roll star. And we said, okay, overnight teenage sensation, rock and roll star, because we say so. When do you want us to start? And he said, we had to figure out costumes and makeup and so on. He said, tomorrow. I mean, we don't lie to the kids. It's an overnight teenage sensation. And so the next day we had created this character with a stunning kind of a black outfit and boots and a James Brown bouffant hairdo and bushy eyebrows to match the hair. And I had written a song in 4 minutes that seemed to be a philosophy that Hubcap, that's K-A-P-P, Hubcap and his band The Wheels would take to heart. And that is work, work's a dirty word, the dirtiest word I've ever heard. And so we introduced them the next day, and the kids went crazy. And it was that period of time when audiences just gave vent to every emotion with their rock and roll superstars, the Beatles and then the Stones and countless others. And so we decided it was a good idea to have them on regularly. And Hub made an appearance every day on the show. Different songs, covers of other people, Dave Clark, Five stuff. And finally, people kept saying, well, why don't you record your own? And we said, okay, well, that'll be fun. That'll be fun. Because I wasn't taking it seriously, but the kids were. And I say kids, I'm talking about through teenage, college, and early adulthood. And so we recorded Work, Work. And put it in the stores thinking, well, I hope it sells a couple. In 3 weeks, it was the number one record on everybody's charts, Chris and Crux. And we couldn't believe that people were buying the record to that degree and loving the idea that they had their own rock and roll star while London and New York and Los Angeles were coveting theirs. We had ours in Phoenix. And they all knew it was me. They all knew that it was me with a wig, but it didn't matter because they loved the idea of Phoenix having its own. Well, everybody loved it except Capitol Records, because that was the label that the Beatles recorded on at the time. And so the executives at Capitol Towers in Hollywood got together and said, what the heck is a hubcap number one in Phoenix, Arizona? No, that's not supposed to happen. The Beatles are always number one on everybody's charts. They sent a guy over, went to one of our concerts, came backstage and said, I've no idea whether you were any good or not. I couldn't hear anything because of the girls screaming. That's how much they took us to heart. And he said, I want you to come over to Hollywood, come to the tower, and we want to talk contract to you. We signed a Capitol Records contract and did appearances on the Steve Allen show, which was the big nighttime show at that time. Joey Bishop, those big nighttime shows loved the idea that this goofy-looking guy with the big wig, although they all took it seriously, the hair and the character. And we were on Capitol for quite a while until, and get this, until our managers that we had acquired through Capitol, all of whom did not ever accept the fact that we were just a character on a kid's show, they wanted us to move to Los Angeles and be a full-time hubcap of the wheels. And my lead guitarist, Mike Condello, turned to me and said, do you really want to be in the Crenshaw County Fair as a 45-year-old Adam West, who happened to be Batman at the time? And we all said, no. The life we have in Phoenix is perfect.
It was good. Well, hey, Pat, real quickly, you know, this story just goes to show the impact. I mean, you guys had such a huge impact on people. And what is it like when you meet adults who just, you know, big fans as kids like Matt here, just the number of kids that you had such a positive impact on with this show.
And that are now grown adults in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
And still love you.
And almost all of them in therapy as a result of watching us. Well, no, it never stops. I mean, if I'm in a grocery store, the show's been off live since 1990, and if I'm in a store or a mall or anything like that, usually the reaction, it's always positive, but the reaction initially is always, so there I was in the seventh row of the Fox Christown Theater, and you and Wallace and Landmo were on stage, and Wallace said, it's time to give away a Landmo bag, and the place goes crazy, because Matt's going to explain Landmo bags in just a moment, but it was the prize that everybody wanted, and still does, and the ones that did not get them, the guy that's talking to me in the mall waited, but the kid next to him got the Landmo bag. And the guy never got over it. He's vice president of a bank now, and he's 50 years old, and he's still holding a grudge about the Landmo bag. Matt, do you want to do a quick Landmo bag?
Well, thing? I think that is a perfect tease for our next segment. So stay tuned, and we will talk about the magic of the Landmo bag.
I know there was...
Are you sure I'm invited back?
Of course.
Please.
Maybe invited back for another hour sometime. Who knows?
I know there was a Coke in the bag, in every bag.
Yes, and animal crackers in the box with the string on it.
We'll take the break and be right back.
That's harsh.
8:52 on... The Morning Voice, Captain Super, and Wallace there off of YouTube. Let's talk about him.
Didn't that sound, when Captain Super was talking about himself, didn't that sound like an address at a political convention?
A typical politician, huh?
You bet. And that was also fun because we did an awful lot of stuff never directed in any way on a partisan basis because we all thought that they all had their broad limitations. But when they listened, when the candidates for any office were watching the show, and they did, they loved it. They would write to us. They would call and say, do more me. I loved what you did about me. And it was not terribly complimentary, to tell you the truth. They didn't care. They just thought it was fun.
Well, the question, everybody's waiting with bated breath. Tell us about the Landmo bags and How did that originate? What were they? And why were they such a coveted?
And what's in them?
What were such a coveted items for
them? I apologize for the length of my answers.
No, it's good.
That you ask. The questions you ask are about something that is so complex and so involved. To go back in history and look at the beginnings of a Ladmo bag, most people say, well, couldn't you have just said, I'm going to get a toy and give it away to the kids that are on the show? Well, that's how it started. When you were picked out of a great big barrel of postcards, you were eligible to come down and be on the show and win a prize. So that was one of the highlights of anybody's life, was to be picked as a guest on the Wallace and Ladmo show. And we had a studio audience besides. But you get a Ladmo bag. Well, before that, it was the toy from the toy cottage here. And you got to pick being on the show. You were sitting on the set. It was live. And you'd look up at these rows of great toys and games, and Wallace would say, pick one. And the kid would go, let me see, I have one of those. Well, the pace of the show went right into the plumbing.
You had to speed it up.
And, right, here we go. We got the show that's moving along, and then,
right.
So we went into the dressing room, and I said, why don't we dump the idea of the toys and having a choice to make. And why don't we just put a bunch of sponsors' products, Hostess cupcakes and animal crackers and all of those goodies that make orthodontists go crazy. And why don't we just put them in a bag and have Ladmo sign it? In fact, we could call it a Ladmo bag. And from then on, I think the entire bag, grocery bag from Bashers, was probably valued at about $4.95, and you'd think that it was Captain Kidd's treasure chest to this day. And if I may please tell you that, in case you didn't hear, one of the biggest honors of our lives, we've gotten Emmys and we've gotten plaques and trophies, and if you stay alive long enough in media, somebody will give you a plaque. But in this case, the City Council of Phoenix last week decided that the street that went by the original Channel 5 building downtown Phoenix should be changed from First Avenue and McKinley. Forever and a day, it will be known as Wallace and Ladmo Way.
Love it.
And you guys in broadcasting know that that's something you can't ever imagine, having a street named after you and after the show. Tremendous honor. And quite honestly, the City Council was mostly interested in, now that they voted that special honor for us, do they get a Ladmo bag?
And the answer is maybe.
So it's a quid pro quo. That's amazing.
No, you have to, and you have, you could never buy one. You could never do anything except win one. You have to win one, or if it's an auction for charity, bid on one. But they're still absolutely like fine jewelry up here with grown-ups and the kids that have heard about Ladmo bags from their grandparents.
Well, we could do probably another hour.
Easily.
And maybe another two or three, but yeah. We have to end it here. I'm grateful that you returned our call yesterday. It's been great catching up with you. From a 19-year-old snotty-nosed kid at KOI that did your news, and then you followed me over to KTAR with Preston Westmoreland and the gang over there. I remember that as well.
I want you to know that this was great fun for me. And as we said earlier off the air, all the stars appeared on the show. Don Rickles and Jack Benny and stars of sports like Rocky Marciano, Willie Mays. They all were part of the show. Alice Cooper, biggest fan still of the Wallace and Ladmo show. But I'm feeling the same way about your show. I wish I could get it up here. So why don't we make arrangements with engineers to get me a personal signal?
All right, sir. Thank you for your time, Pat.
Been a pleasure.
You bet. You bet.